Skylab Gallery in beautiful downtown Columbus, Ohio. This is Skyblab. I'm James Payne.
And I'm Tatiana Kajamis.
Skyblab will be a semi-regular podcast featuring artists, performers, and events that happen at Columbus's premier art space, Skylab Gallery.
On this episode of Skyblab, we'll cover recent performances by poet John M. Bennett, artist and writer Anne Elizabeth Moore, and a review of Jeffrey Eugenides' new book, The Marriage Plot. But first, we'll hear from Roger Beebe, Associate Professor of Film and Media Studies at the University of Florida.
Beebe brought his performance, Films for 1-8 Projectors, to Skylab on October 14th. The 75-minute program of short films he's made since 2001 is not your normal cinematic experience. Beebe presents the viewer with simultaneous projections that, taken together, make up one film, a technique some term expanded cinema. Improvised each night by manipulating the 6 different projectors, Beebe's films are never seen in exactly the same way.
Most traditional thing that's called expanded cinema is something that's much more abstract, much more interested in form alone. So yeah, my version of expanded cinema is something that still, like, often has a kind of experimental documentary shape. And that's kind of trying to think through, like, the changes that are happening in the world around us. Projections running side by side, that it would just be overwhelming, it would be too much, you know, there'd be no way, the person would be sort of adrift in it. And so I tried to slow it down for Money Changes Everything. I tried to slow down the rhythm, I didn't want it to be that aggressive. And then I started feeling, well, actually maybe people can handle more, and you know, and so motion picture moved back towards a little bit more, a little bit faster editing, a little bit more aggressive, but only with 2 images. It's hard not to be interested in language. I mean, we kind of define ourselves in it and think in it and communicate in it. But I think I'm especially interested in the places where, like, the demands of capital kind of deform language. And so, like, in AA motion picture, I'm really interested in the sort of, like, the richness of these different names that have been reduced to different permutations of, you know, 3A, 5A, 15A. With Last Light of a Dying Star, that's the 6 projector finale. I feel like with that one, part of the rhythm is determined actually by how long it takes me to change over projectors and stuff. And I actually really like the way that slows me down, because otherwise I think I might be like, okay, I'm bored of this, like, let's get a new thing on. And I really like that says, like, no, we're gonna look at this green loop for, you know, 90 seconds by itself or whatever. So yeah, so for me, touring is really important for that. And it's also, like, a really great privilege to be able to present a whole program of your own work and to be able to, like, have it kind of speak to itself, and so that you can see things like, you know, what's going on with language across these different films or whatever. So, I mean, that for me is, like, you know, again, incredibly rewarding and, you know, worth whatever blisters I come home with.
Thank you. The climbing plants crawled beside my chin hair. Linty pill, break fog's crispy sugar, or your dung lap sticky clock, spattered Sure, your plod leg, lug, finger blot, must my rancid jar, rain air, spell the Geltzim, shoe full of cornflakes, grunt. Dump the mask, your draining face, dimple shape of soggy cornflakes, lumpy tongue, sheathing sugar to death. Drilling oil. Erosive shadow on my neck, a dusty sandwich spelled with loud crickets scrabble in my sleeve. You sleep and write your teethy brush, a liquid mirror.
Right here, I promise it'll get better.
That was You Want Me to Go featuring Nikki Portman from Envelope and Jakati Soam's new EP, This Could Go Either Way, copies of which can be found in each of the 8 Columbus record stores Envelope played last Saturday. By the way, podcast-to-podcast shout-out to Tony's Tony Envelope Mixtape Homemade, which you should go download from enveloperaps.com.
Before that was John M. Bennett, curator of the Avant Reading Collection at the Ohio State University Libraries, from his poetry reading at Skylab in September.
And up next is School of the Art Institute of Chicago professor and Fulbright scholar Anne Elizabeth Moore reading from her new book on cantankerous titles, Cambodian Girl, self-publishing in Phnom Penh, which documents her experiences teaching zine writing to women in Cambodia.
So this is called Date with Extra. I could not refuse the offer to exchange phone numbers with someone whose job it was to get others out of trouble via extra legal means. After all, when I couldn't find a moto one night, he had gallantly borrowed his brother's and driven me home. Not for money, as a favor, even before that I'd been told, that guy, he gets stuff done. He knows everyone. Which is not normally something that impresses me, but his job title did, fixer. He could turn a visa around in a few hours, score you tickets to anything in town, spring you from the clink on a moment's notice, even if you were American. Even if your imprisonment was justified. Also, he was young, scrappy, clearly understood power dynamics in a way most people can't, clever, or actually cute. So, okay, he dropped me at home and then offered to missed call to me, which is where I tell him my phone number and he calls it and I don't answer, but I do have his number now. Most Cambodians have cell phones, but many cannot afford to purchase them minutes necessary to speak on them. So text messaging and even missed calling become communication mediums of their own. The person with this number is thinking of you, it means sometimes, or the person with this number is running late, or the person with this number would like you to call them. The fixer spent a lot of time with foreigners. It seemed natural to me that he would want to hang out. Sometimes people are just more comfortable with others of dissimilar backgrounds. A reasonable cross-cultural friendship could result from this missed call thing to me, I rationalized. But he was definitely not in this for the as he took me to the nicest restaurant in town. Because he's a landowner, I didn't feel the slightest bit weird about that, economically speaking, although for any other Cambodian I knew, I would have offered to pay. To be honest, I'm not sure I was really in it for the hangout time either. I wanted to know what a fixer does all day. I wanted to know what a fixer's life is like. I wanted to know how a fixer spends his evenings. Apparently, they spend them having sexualized conversations with girls, because our food had not arrived before he was telling me how tired he was of my prostitutes and how much he preferred foreign girlfriends. It was a ham-fisted invitation, and although I am daft, it did not go unnoticed by me. But I was definitely not in this for the sexual experimentation, and most certainly not interested in a relationship. Prostitutes aside, he claimed to be interested in a relationship for the most part. He slipped up a few times and mentioned having a girlfriend, although he would then try to explain that actually, she got married 2 years ago and now he was available. And by now he meant now, had I finished my dinner? I had not. It had just arrived at the table. I initiated conversation. What province was he from? When did he come to the city? Among the information I gleaned from him, he moved to the city alone at 13 to go to high school. He comes from the classic broken home, which in Cumminglish is when one's husband or father gets a new wife. A new wife does not usually indicate a legal remarriage, and it doesn't always entail a divorce from the old wife. Sometimes this happens quite suddenly. Sometimes the old wife never finds out. The fixer had traveled some, was a mover and a shaker, had been to Australia, was 26, also liked to sleep with English girls, was into Tom, preferred to spend his free time watching TV or getting a blowjob, really liked romance. Romance, I repeated. Tilted my head to the side. I couldn't really place the word. Romance, he said again, as if it were a common concept. He elaborated. First, he described it as being the opposite of what girls in bars want, prostitutes. So, sex, money, to survive in a culture hostile to women's rights, to feed their kids. I didn't know what girls in bars in Cambodia wanted. Since I had not visited a bar, I lived in a dorm. My friends were 17. Most of them had never seen a beer. A beer, when I go to a bar, I want a beer. I was pretty sure romance did not mean the opposite of beer. Like on a couch, he said, and repeated the word for emphasis, romance. The way he drew it out, I finally understood it too. Mutual physical pleasure. And what about you? What do you like? He asked me as we finished our meal. I'd now cracked the code sufficiently to understand that a list of my favorite books was not an appropriate response. His question meant sexually. What do you like sexually? It was the first question he'd asked me. Clearly, Fitzers believe a lengthy monologue is seductive. Oh, Christ, I breathed out from my mouth. I couldn't help it. He hadn't caught my interjections throughout his monologue intended to convey, this is your trip, dude. A feminist construct snapped together in my mind like a magical self-building geodesic dome. He had advertised mutual physical pleasure, put it right out there, perk, should I choose to take him up on his offer of couch time, an add-on, a service he rendered for his own ultimate enjoyment. Neither standard nor necessary, certainly not. What I might like was, literally, an afterthought. Look, I settled for tact. I'm quite a bit older than you. Romance doesn't really fit into my life right now, I told him. Not to mention that it wouldn't fit in before curfew, which was in about 10 minutes. No, I'm 26, he said. You're 16, 17. He said it slowly, patiently, because I did not understand. I was a girl. I laughed out loud. No, I was 37. You what? No, he was baffled. However, he was not put off. Which, oh man, it is one thing to be in an organic conversation and caught up in emotional potential and mystery and discovery and excitement about someone, and it is mutual in a genuine way, but it is totally another when you aren't caught up in anything. When there is nothing organic going on except that the man you are with, he apparently feels comfortable talking at length about his physical interests and expects you to feel just as enthusiastic about them. Your own interests, your own physical demands, your own expressions thereof, these are irrelevant, these are not present, these do not matter, you were a girl, and this is Cambodia.
That was the title music to Jack Ramouni and Alex Ross's recent Art Bond exhibition at the Design Studios on Broad Street at the Columbus College of Art and Design.
Booze and Books.
Hey everybody, so this is Booze and Books with me, Tatiana Kajamis, where I get wasted on some beer and talk about my favorite books. And you listen to it so my friends don't have to. In this edition of Booze and Books, we will be talking about Jeffrey Eugenides' hot new novel, The Marriage Plot. Perhaps you're familiar with Jeffrey Eugenides. He wrote that book, Middlesex, and also that other book, The Virgin Suicides, which was turned into a movie, for those of you who don't read. Okay, so I have had 1.5 PBR tall boys. I'm just going to go ahead and shotgun this last one so we can just really get to the solid Booze and Books talk. So to start off, The Marriage Plot is a pretty traditional love story triangle about some rich fuckers who went to Brown and studied literature, like, you know, I wish I had.
And if I had, I probably wouldn't be doing this podcast or be drinking so much. Main character Madeline is a girl who just really loves Victorian novels. I can relate. Really big fan of Victorian novels. And she is totally in love with this dude, Leonard, who is, like, really moody. And then this other dude, what's his name? Yeah, so this other dude, Mitchell, is, like, totally into her because she's really hot. But he's, like, really sincere and kind of annoying. Lots of things happen to these characters, as frequently happens in novels, you know? Like, there are these things that happen. I think it's called a plot. And that brings me back to the title, which is awesome, because the title is called The Marriage Plot. And that refers to this kind of tradition in Victorian literature where books were structured so that the whole plot was about a woman kind of going after a man, the right match, falling in love, whether he was wealthy or not wealthy, and then kind of ending up with him. And the book ended with her marriage. Towards the end of the Victorian era, became less popular or kind of transformed into being these like kind of darker books, like Henry James's books, or, you know, like if you think about Isabel Archer, what's that book called? Oh, Fortune of a Lady, which clearly I am not. If you think about that book, then it goes into her marriage and like her husband's an asshole and like he collects art and Jesus Christ, who wants to be married to a dude who collects art? In any case, so my thoughts about this book are kind of varied. Like, I was really excited when I started reading it. However, there were a few things I didn't like about it. The language is kind of oversimplified. It's, like, just not... I mean, it's a super easy read. You go through it really fast. But, like, you know, it's not spectacular as a 19th century Victorian novel would be. Another thing about it is that it kind of sets up this dichotomy between kind of classic literature lovers and like the semiotics and literary theory that was like really prevalent in the 80s, which is when these fuckers were going to school. But the end of the novel kind of leaves you unresolved about what Geoffrey Eugenides' actual feelings about that are, in that it's just kind of like, So it's like weird because I wanted it to be this kind of like apologist novel where it's like, listen, everybody, I know that semiotics came along and totally fucked up everything. Like, okay, yeah, it's kind of interesting, especially for pretentious douchebags who just like really want to score with girls at parties. Like, yeah, drop some semiotics. But it should be like, but I don't give a fuck because novels are the shit. And let's just like realize that, right? Anyway, so that is my review of Geoffrey Eugenides' The Marriage Plot, which has recently been published by Knopf, and you can get it at your local library or bookstore, I assume. And yeah, I hope you check it out, especially if you really love reading, which I do, because it is definitely a book for book lovers. So until next time, cheers, everybody.
Booze and books. Coming up at Skylab Gallery. On November 3rd, Ruby Klassen from the Greater Columbus Arts Council will be discussing grant opportunities for local artists and musicians. On November 23rd, it's Time and Temperature, Jay Harmon, and Lexington, Kentucky's Cross. On November 27th, Justin Clifford Rohde and Patrick Elkins bring a photography slideshow as well as a shadow puppet show from Michigan. Thanks for listening to this inaugural edition of Skylab, your source for Skylab news. And here is Follow Me Out, a track from Baltimore's Angels in America, who will play with Pillowbiter at Skylab on November 11th.